You guys, I'm gonna try to zoom in or come in by my phone. Isn't working.
You can hear us though, right?
Yeah, I can hear you, but this is not satisfactory. So I'm gonna try to log in on my phone. So
Jane, yeah. Oh, you can't see anybody, right?
I can't see anybody, and it's highly.
Because I don't know if you've met Michelle, who's with us tonight.
I have not. Hi, Michelle.
Michelle Tulo. She is the she's the
Housing Justice Director.
Housing Justice Director.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. Okay, well, so annoying. I'm closing this down. I'm going to see you guys on another device.
Okay.
Bye.
On another planet, in another hemisphere. So, okay, first we could talk, I mean, we're close to moving 429 out of that building. And I asked Jeff to remind us how we go about selling it. And it's really, I think, pretty easy. I think we begin with an appraisal.
And or if you decide to go straight to auction.
Oh, we could go straight to auction without an appraisal.
You go straight to auction. I mean, some of the value of doing an appraisal is you could set yourself a reserve price.
Right. Oh, so what if we just use the reserve price from the old appraisal? Because it's pretty high.
Oh, yeah. If that's the one you're talking about, I didn't realize. Yeah, if that's something you want to do and set that as, you know, or something based on that and put it up for auction.
Okay. And then don't we need like 2/3 of the council to approve, though, right? Or
3/4.
I'm sorry, 3/4. I knew 2/3 was too low. Yeah, Rebecca, remember I said earlier in our conversation 2/3? I meant 3/4.
Right.
It was two thirds for discontinuing a street.
Right, that's where I got that from. So we need, yeah, and we determined that's 9 people. But and then we can put it up for auction. And then we can talk about the other issues, Rebecca, when we get closer to it. Okay?
Issues.
Well, you know, I guess we don't even have to talk about it here, but, you know, what we're going to do with it in terms of the money and all that kind of thing.
Well, you know. I do think this is a good place to talk about, you know, what are the goals of the city for the proceeds from any sales.
Right.
What, like, because we do have, you know, this is the properties committee, but it's not just, I mean, I think the idea should be that we understand that, like, the city doesn't have unlimited revenue sources.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the big ones that, right. I mean, it's a finite thing. We're not going right. to,
we're not going to have endless properties to sell.
Yeah. And that what we do with these monies is really important,
mm-hmm.
obviously. And so if we're talking about selling a property in any like immediate future, that we should have a specific purpose for the revenue.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also need to talk about, do we want to put any restrictions in the sale? I mean, when we sold 427, for example, one aspect of the sale was that the front had to be a commercial space.
Which property are you talking about? I'm sorry.
The one next door, the old police building.
Okay.
There were a couple, and also that it could not be sold to a nonprofit. That was one of the restrictions.
Wouldn't it make sense to make those restrictions on a per property basis? Because it seems like it's not going to be one size fits all.
Yeah,
but
of course.
I take Rebecca's point that our overarching goal in the sale of these properties or dissolution of these properties should have, you know, a general purpose and mm-hmm. a general intent. We should do this with intention. And if it's to create more housing, we should say that. We don't have to be any more specific.
Mm-hmm.
If it is to just go into the general fund, we can say that, although I think that would be kind of too broad a category. But I think Rebecca is exactly right. I think it's within our, it's really our responsibility to earmark where we believe any funds resulting from these properties should go. I mean, that's
sure.
just seems ethically right. And then on a case-by-case basis, put any caveats on that are seem appropriate.
Sure, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I don't see why, you know, we can't think of things that could fund. I mean, I'd like to see, for example, I mean, we're going to have some big new expenses in the next budget round, such as hiring an HR person. So, you know, we're going to need some, you know, to use some of that revenue might be needed for things like that. But at the same time, there's no reason it can't help fund the housing
trust fund.
I can never remember. Trust fund, land trust, you know, it's all confusing. But the housing trust fund, I mean, we could definitely recommend, of course, we have to take it all to the full council, no matter what we do. But we could definitely, what Jeff made it look like, and he's also mute.
So I think that's really right. And I think it should be somehow related to, you know, a building. I fear that if it goes to fund an HR person HR department, right, sorely needed. Doesn't seem an appropriate
because it's a one-time.
My only caveat on all of this, and we'd have to look into it, is the way the city does its budgeting with the BEA. The ability of you to sort of restrict the funds that are coming in and how they have to go, I think they still are going to be subject to essentially the BEA review. I'm not sure you can do much more than a sense of the council resolution on it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So maybe that's just something
we could try and figure out. But I, you know,
are you suggesting that it would be more like a suggestion from the council than a?
Right. Now, it may be possible, though, that the housing trust fund may be a different animal to put it into, because that would, and I don't know how that's being set up.
Well,
but that is independent somehow from the normal city budget process or some kind of a segregated fund. But it's not like you're putting something into a benefit district or anything.
So, Jeff, when they established the lodging tax originally, and granted that was done by law, they did earmark a percentage of that. And you'd say that's because it was done by law, right?
It was a tax that was established by law that created it to go in there. And you're right. I mean, that is a good example. But if that worked, it would have to be something similar to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the trust fund could be done that way.
Okay.
I think.
That's worth looking into then.
But in terms of a general thing of, like, you know, selling a city property and saying this is where the proceeds are going.
Right.
Well, so you're saying that, so the council could pass a resolution saying, you know, we the council believe that the funds from this go towards hiring an HR person, for example. But then if the BEA committee decided otherwise, you're saying that the council
I wasn't following you correctly. I wouldn't think that you'd put a kind of requirement in that for funding the HR person. That's a general fund.
That was just an example.
I think a better example, trying to say what you're doing, is like for a special project that the city wanted to do, or the council wanted to do, separate from the trust fund, because let's assume the trust fund's a different animal you can put it to.
Yeah, but, no, I wasn't suggesting that.
Like if you said we wanted this to be spent for improvements to Oakdale Park, right?
Which is a one
some other general, you know,
for one-time things rather than
a one-time capital project.
Because HR is going to be a new position that has to be funded every year, so that's not even
right.
It's not even worth thinking in those terms.
So that's what I don't know, is if you could target it to to a specific capital project or something or one-time program.
So, yeah, that's worth looking into when you develop the trust.
I mean, a different angle is on this is something that we have been not really seriously talking about, but we really should seriously talk about, is the community land trust, right? So that, which is, I mean, it's the way that would come at it from the other end of saying these properties are in trust, and any proceeds from these properties are used in these ways, right?
Mm-hmm. And is that separate from the Housing Trust Fund?
Yep.
Yes.
Totally different thing. So, it's a totally
explain
different.
Explain this one to me.
Well, a community land trust is a mechanism where a municipality can put properties in a trust for the benefit of the community and can write, like, I guess, guidelines that describe how these properties are supposed to benefit the community. And I believe it can either be like, through the use of the properties to develop for housing or to develop for the community in other ways. Or it can also be that the proceeds from the sale of anything that's in the community land trust can be, is determined how those proceeds will be used. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Do we have those in New York? I'm not familiar with that.
We definitely do. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
But that's different from the Housing Trust Fund.
Yes. So a housing trust fund is not properties. It's actual monies, which come from various streams. And Michelle and Sarah Black and I are working on developing our housing trust fund.
Why couldn't you combine these into the same vehicle that has the same entity that, has a revenue stream like you're talking about that goes on and does stuff, but then also has in the trust the city properties, manages it like you talk about, sells them occasionally, puts it back into the trust fund. I'm not sure, do you need two separate entities?
That's an interesting question.
I think there are models where they're combined and then there's models that they're separate. I think it has to do with capacity. So
which would be a reason to combine given Hudson's limited capacity. Yeah.
And then sometimes it's easier to have the trust housed under a nonprofit if they have the capacity to run it, which the government doesn't. So it's an option for a model.
I think that's the problem. That's the difference with the whether it's a city entity or not is where I think the question comes in.
The housing.
But you'll just have to explore it. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as ideas.
I mean, that's a really interesting idea, and mm-hmm. I guess we should. We're really trying to we have to finalize our plans for the housing trust fund over the next 2 months, I think, right? So
yeah.
These questions are ones that we should answer over the next month, I think. Jeff, do you have capacity to research what is the best, one of the things that we have to, for the housing trust fund, and I'm sorry, this is off topic for the properties, maybe not.
No.
We have to find a legal counsel to help us draw up the housing trust fund. So maybe that's you.
A budget for that, right? I mean, you have money to do that with?
Mm-hmm. We do.
Oh. You got money. I am pretty sure you could hire somebody better than me. I'm happy to be modest about it because, it'd be better to find somebody who's got some experience on it than, I can issue spot a little bit, but I'm not going to be the most efficient person to do that. I'd be happy to work with, whoever we have and drafting and doing that. But if you've got funds for it, let's get a firm that's had some experience.
Sounds
good. And I have to think about it. None jumps to mind, but I can think. I don't know.
There's a couple people in Albany I've been reaching out to, so.
Who? We can talk about.
I have to look that up.
Okay, well, let's talk offline. Give me a call and find out.
Michelle.
I'll give you my views.
Yeah. Cool. That's good. Great. So, Rebecca, I kind of mentioned to Jeff the other proposal,
mm-hmm.
Which in the 25 minutes ago that I talked to him, he was unable to research at all.
I can't believe it. But, so we were talking about, Tom and I were talking about the 4th Street, the 4th and State parcel, which the council approved as a site for developing affordable housing. And so we were talking about what will we have to do to take steps with that? Like what are the processes that we have to go through if we want to, for example, transfer the ownership of it to a developer?
Rebecca, excuse me, is this the parking lot, the current parking lot next to the Board of Elections? Okay, thanks.
You want to explain the whole potential project, Rebecca? Because otherwise it sounds sketchy, you know, just giving a property. First of all, it's a nonprofit developer. We should make that clear. So
thanks, Tom. I would love a little, you know, paragraph on this.
Rebecca's been doing a lot of work on this. Tell them what you've done. Tell them what you've done, Rebecca.
Okay. Well, so it's really, I mean, so it's something that, you know, I haven't done anything, but hopefully there's a really interesting conversation happening that may beautifully result in an actual effect, which would be that, you know, so there's a private owner in Hudson who has been selling off their properties, and essentially, like, Michelle and I have spoken with a nonprofit developer who is very experienced and has a great reputation and has done lots of projects around the Hudson Valley, and who is interested in talking with us working with us in a really serious way on basically developing some scattered site affordable housing around this. So developing the properties that are being sold off and developing that site. So that would involve the city providing that site. I mean, that's what makes the project like worthwhile for this developer, is essentially if they can develop enough apartments, homes, for people to make it, you know, to bring, like, make their presence in Hudson, you know, worthwhile for them. Workable, I mean, that's, you know, because the scattered site housing is quite small lots, but still could be made into more housing than is currently on them. But so what's kind of incredible for the city is that these the scattered sites currently have tenants in them, and this developer would actually want to retain the tenants. You know, I mean, they would have to be relocated while the while the properties are developed. Their goal would be to actually create more housing for specifically for Section 8 voucher use. Because they're a developer that really cares about that, like, is quite concerned about how difficult it is for, as Hudson has, I think 130 vouchers, and we have currently, like, I forget if it's 50 or 80 that are unused, because we don't have enough landlords that are taking them, although that's recently been made illegal to not accept Section 8 vouchers. But so that's am I telling this correctly, Tom?
Yeah, it sounds good to me. It's a nonprofit developer who's been interested in Hudson for a long time, and they would like to have a presence here. They were sort of interested in JLE at one point, and given the nature of the present developer's project, they may come back. I don't know if everybody's looked at that, but it's, I don't know. Anyway, moving along from that, we could actually talk about that as well. But yeah, I think that's a good description to get Jeff some information in terms of how would we be able to structure this to get, to let them develop that property?
I mean, what I have to look at on this is a question of, you know, can the city really gift this to a private entity? There's a constitutional prohibitions against gifts of government property. There are ways around that, that things are structured. And I don't know, you know, how we could structure a deal that going it this way. It could be a transfer to HCDPA and maybe allowed to do that as a vehicle.
Oh, okay. That would be great.
I'm assuming they don't.
I just don't know. And I don't think it's going to be that hard to find out. I think I'll probably talk to NICOM and get some guidance on it.
I'm assuming the developers have done something like this before. I mean, right? I mean, they're quite experienced.
Well, whether they're gifts, the question is, you know, how is a zero gift and it's tax exempt property also. So it's, you know.
Right. Well, if they could, it's not just so simple. It's like we charge them $100 or something, is it?
No, it's got to be a reasonable value. Okay. Now, it may be a kind of a thing of committing them with a deed restriction and such to Section 8 housing.
Which would be great.
You know, we put in that kind of use of a strict deed restriction, that may be of sufficient value of calculating that out. It's for a public purpose. I'm kind of thinking up the top of my head.
And these are questions Michelle and Rebecca can ask them, I would think, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Rebecca, well, I would assume when you're doing this, is they are committing to the housing, right? To the Section 8, or you're not sure yet?
I mean, we certainly haven't, like, arrived at that level of detail of conversation, but and also the Section 8 that I was referring to is the current scattered site housing, so I wasn't actually talking about that the new development would necessarily be 100% for Section 8 tenants. So
my understanding was that this is all like in discussion, but from our conversation is that they could commit to all like 80% or below AMI, but the combination of whether it's 30 or 80 or like transitional housing would have to depend on like the finance package they get. But there, it wouldn't be mixed rate, it'd be all affordable.
So what I've learned from one of these developers is that you can ask for like a baseline. You know what I'm talking about, Michelle? Where you'd say like 50%, and then they can go either way to balance out at 50 or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I think, what? Somebody say something? Oh, never mind. But that often is a workable formula.
Right.
So that sounds
maybe
great.
It simply is also reserving, you know, a certain number of units or the units on that parcel for Section 8.
Right.
Great. And then if there's, I don't know if it gets complicated, if they have commercial tenants on the first floor to help them, you know, meet their piece of the development financing, if that would complicate from the city's end. But then also we could create some kind of like MOU or something that the tenants, commercial tenants have to be kind of a community driven or some kind of business that's beneficial to the community.
Or they actually pay property taxes.
Yeah.
And these, Rebecca, these are tax exempt. These are all tax exempt buildings that this nonprofit guy would group would put together. Is that?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
And by the way,
do you know if is there a minimum number that they would want to build to have it be sort of worth their efforts? I mean, they're not, and particularly because they're scattered sites. So do they need to build 50 units to have this, you know, have the finances work?
They have their own calculations, which, you know, that they do have like some conditions they need to meet for sure. But I think, you know, we toured and they just from sort of assessing like what could they probably build on the sites. It seemed like it would
it would satisfy their, okay. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that it's a scattered site project.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we'd really bring to a head all these people who said, oh, we want scattered site, not density. And then we'll see if they actually want that.
Well, there's always going to be some people don't want anything.
No,
but,
of course.
But just to refer back to the strategic housing plan, one of the points of that was that the development of affordable housing, particularly Section 8 or any subsidized housing, was to be scattered across the city. It was never intended to be centralized in a neighborhood. Like, you know what? So this is in accordance with that document.
Yeah, urban renewal, you know.
Yeah, great idea.
Well, as you know, that a decision to sell the property for or transfer the property for that purpose will require a 3/4 vote of the council. And you will have to go through SEAKER for that because you're doing it for a specific project.
You know, I missed the sentence.
Just to complicate your life.
Well, one of the things that the developer also suggested is that we should tour one of their projects that's completed, that's nearby, in a nearby city, and which is very, very impressive and excellent and has like a lot of environmental advantages too. It's like a, you know, net zero construction.
Are you at liberty to reveal the location of that place?
For some reason, I honestly just don't know whether I should, how specific we should be at this time. So we'll just, you know,
offline,
later on.
Offline.
Next month.
That's cool. Well, this is great, I think. I mean, let's continue on this.
Yeah, so we'll just find out what we have to do. Yeah?
Right.
Jeff?
I'll explore, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably what's going to be necessary to, you know, structure something like that.
It would be amazing if they could put together a package like this. Now, those Section 8 houses, are they off the tax roll already because of taking Section 8? No.
No.
No, they don't. No. Okay.
Like, private landlords can take Section 8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't give them any other tax.
Intended rate. Mostly for private land. Landlords, are they the only ones who take it?
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't know.
No, HHA takes it.
When the Housing Authority the Housing Authority is the Section 8 administrator, but actually maybe there's something called like Section.
There is a number.
The Housing Authority
right.
doesn't
have. It's not Section, it's another Section number.
Yeah.
Right. When back in, a year ago, when we were discussing the Galvin project, the first Galvin project on North 7th Street, they were going to be taking a designated number of Section 8 vouchers.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, anybody can take them if they want to, whether it's just a you know, private landlord or a bigger entity.
So. What else can we talk about tonight? I mean, those are two really two things we need to push forward, I think, what Rebecca's talking about, and the sale of 427, and to think about it, think about how we, you know, any limitations we want to put on the sale, you know, and how to go forth. I think, I can't remember if I've said this already, but 429, when we sold it, we found that a public auction was a better way to go than a sealed bid auction.
Because it drove the price up? Because you got a bigger...
It actually created the only price. The sealed bid got no responses. It's hard. You know, where do you... I don't know. It was a bad idea.
Well, so how can we get a conversation going in the city about what is an appropriate... What are the possible alternatives to just selling that building to the highest bidder? Like, is there any community use like that that would be more, that would somehow benefit
the city? Yeah, I have one.
What?
A marijuana dispensary.
Bingo.
And
bingo.
I think I've told you there's...
bingo parlor in it. I'm sorry.
I've been approached by three groups already. And I actually said, but, you know, we have this one building, but, you know, it's got two apartments upstairs. Oh, they said, oh, it doesn't matter. We can put our offices up there. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yes.
Well, I mean, okay. Is that actually a possibility that we could have the city, like a municipally
owned? We're talking about a municipally operated dispensary.
No. So we're just talking about retaining the building so that we can rent it to a dispensary.
Which will bring in phenomenal revenue.
Right.
Great benefit to the city. Not just revenue, by the way. There are all these built-in equity things, like where some of that money has to go, who you employ. Yeah. I mean, there's tons of things being built into the whole system, although I've heard some questions about it. But it's more, the questions have more to do with cultivators than they do with distribution. And it's true that some of these dispensary groups don't seem to be as... you know, they're well funded, so they're not really, they're not helping the small entrepreneur really, but that's a whole other issue that would be tough for us to sort of, you know, figure out how to make sure it's small.
So aren't there people in the community that are very much like in the inside of this whole business?
Yes, and he, if you're talking about Bill Hughes, he's got his eyes on much bigger things.
I just meant actually more to consult with us about how to locate like a really great one of those.
Yeah. If you can think of somebody to talk to, I don't really know.
Well, like the Hudson Hemp people.
Yeah. See, they're more focused.
They're more on the production side.
Exactly. They're more on the cultivator side.
That's a whole different.
Yeah.
That's not distribution. That's not even processing.
Right. Maybe they know
some people. Yeah. That's the
yeah.
thing.
I'm sure. No, I'll ask Chris. That's a possibility. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's. I was hoping I was thinking
about those companies that expressed interest.
Mm-hmm.
Are they willing to get into a contract to purchase or lease prior to the state setting up all of its rules for the dispensaries and how they're going to give licenses?
That's a good question. Because
that's probably not going to be happening for about a year, at least.
Well, yeah. Bill says January things will start.
Well, they'll start, but I don't know. But
Might. They might.
Yeah, I don't think they've named the commission yet.
Right.
I'm just wondering about...
How early, though?
In terms of your desire, when you want to start producing revenue from it.
Right. I'll find out.
We really don't need another clothing store or something, you know, or in my humble opinion, my sense is just like, once you sell that building, you never have it again. And is there something that we can do to kind of like connect it to the city in a meaningful way that would be beneficial? Yeah.
Well, except that we're getting rid of it as a city building. But I see what you're saying. I mean, could it be? Well, that's what you talk about when you talk about, you know, limitations on the sale. You know, mm-hmm. It will create two apartments. I mean, they'll be market rate, but it will create, there's two unused apartments up there. Mm-hmm. So presumably.
Well, another question I had, though, like, does the city have a need to ever like house somebody or, you know,
what is the square footage of the ground floor?
I don't know offhand.
Is it like,
it's weird. It's very weird footage because there's a front, there's a front room and then you go down steps to a much larger back room. It's an odd building because it was connected to 427. So
the little hallway you walk through to Craig Hegg's office, it's more than that.
Oh yeah, it's everything to the right of that.
So could it be like 2,000 square feet?
Easily, if you include the back part of that part.
Okay, so I'm not at a I have a thought that I can come back to you on, but I can't talk about it at this minute. But it could be a job creation place. So to Rebecca's point of what could it do for the city, it could be a it could have a job creation aspect or workforce development aspect to it.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be amazing. So,
are you talking about the HDC money they haven't gotten yet?
No. This is
no, because yesterday's HDC meeting. That's they're all excited about doing some job development.
Oh no, if they are, I know nothing about it. That's not what I'm talking about. This is entire. Oh no, I wouldn't.
Good.
Oh no. No, it's something else. But it is. It would really be great. That's what I was asking about the square footage. So I think it could be one of those, I mean, in theory, one of those win-win things. So anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Rebecca's right. You can only sell it once. So let's think about what other off, you know.
What I really like, I mean, since never mind. I was going to say it would be a great dispensary is the Washington Hose Building. It's got plenty of parking and of course, and whoever comes in would be able to buy out the two tenants. But that's a whole nother...
Plus, it would be a very cool place because once you stocked up, you could just walk across to that very nice new park.
Exactly. Go up to the river's edge there.
Yeah. In Hudson, New York.
Yeah.
Does the city have to do any type of zoning in advance to allow or?
Well, that's it. That's what they keep telling you. But Jeff says, well,
are you saying to allow?
Yeah, there are two things that the city can or could do. Mm-hmm. You have till the end of the year to decide to prohibit dispensaries,
which we're definitely
interested in doing. So that's fine. And then the other question is, yes, looking at your code. Are there districts or areas where you want to allow this or prohibit it? And does the code as presently written, retail shops would probably cover a dispensary? I mean, obviously you don't have a definition for those in the code. You haven't dealt with it, but you know, do you want to make and also depending what the commission comes up with, whether it's citing restrictions, like it's probably going to
prohibit. The state commission?
I've been assuming just based on logic, which shouldn't apply to this, that they're going to use the same kind of citing rules they have for bars and liquor stores.
Churches, schools.
Right, proximity to churches and schools.
And we're lucky, all our schools are out on Harry Howard, so.
Right, so I mean, but it could be an easy thing then to just look at, but it is something you should think about.
Apart from that, what is that area zoned for? Does it have a light fabrication?
Which?
The 427 Warren Street.
Oh, it's general commercial. I don't have in front of me, but
general commercial. Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to hold on. I mean, I could look right now.
I'll look at it and see.
I think it's central commercial.
Central commercial, that's right, yeah.
That looks right.
What does that include?
Central commercial, let's see who gets there first.
Central commercial permitted uses are retail stores and banks, personal service stores, professional government business offices, schools, churches, libraries, theaters, hotels, service establishments, outlets and pickup stations, newspaper printing, assembling of products, public and private parking lots, bus station, any use permitted in an R1, R2, R2H, R3, or R4 districts.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty broad. Okay.
Also, wholesale storage and warehousing. All the conditional uses, too. So, yeah, it's pretty broad.
Okay. So, all
And it says,
if you wanted to, again, just for clarity, you know, in something like this, we could amend the law as simply as saying, you know, the retail stores includes marijuana, cannabis dispensaries.
Yeah.
And that the eating and drinking establishments include cannabis cafes.
Ooh. Okay.
Well, that would be one hot location for a cannabis dispensary.
I think we'd have to make sure that you do the rezoning before you make an agreement with anybody.
Yeah.
Right, because otherwise you get into the issue of like spot zoning.
Right.
No, the argument actually more be contract zoning, but it would be okay. But you would want to do it anyway. I mean, you're right, Michelle. It's a neater.
Especially if the city is the one who's going to be like that.
Well, you're not. Well, where it would also be an issue, Michelle would be right, is if you were only going to allow the dispensaries in one very small location, and you had you controlled the only one and sold it to this person, or at least that would get weird.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're planning on doing being that limited unless you're trying to give a monopoly to one person.
Mm. Okay. Michael, did you have anything you were working on or?
Forgive me for not taking any photos this month. Was a little busy with a campaign of mine, but I'm happy to continue going through the list in July.
Oddly enough, for someone who formerly rented that building up near the water treatment plant has expressed interest in it again, which is very bizarre. She hasn't returned my call, so she called the mayor, but I don't know if that's going to work out. I don't know if we want to.
Is that to rent or to buy?
It wasn't even clear whether it was to rent or to buy. Mm. You've heard of the famous Charlie Butterworth?
Worth?
And that was back from my time.
Yeah. His daughter had been renting there.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Sort of.
Linda, please enlighten us.
No.
Sort of renting, not really.
Yeah, right. It was a... Oh, I'll get in trouble again. It was a sweetheart deal. And,
yeah.
So maybe she thinks that's still on the... But we'll see. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
No.
Okay. Is that it, Rebecca? I mean, you got so much great news today. Is there anything else?
I think that's all for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you do, I mean, we do know where we need to go with some of these things, right? I mean.
So
you guys are going to be working on the trust so that we can.
Yes.
You know, then think you of mean,
right. So now we have to, we have to determine what would it mean if we were including properties in the housing trust fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think Michelle and I need to, Michelle's been pursuing, Michelle's been pursuing finding us a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like going to tell us a lot. And
we have most of the components of it written. I think the goal is to get an attorney to make sure everything's good and hopefully get this to the council for like September.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then to pursue what you need to figure out for the for getting that property as part of arrangement with the nonprofit developer.
Indeed.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And that's pretty exciting, Rebecca and Michelle. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
They're good. They're good. I mean, they have a proven track record, so.
Yeah.
It's all good. Okay, I guess that's it for tonight.
Sounds good.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Anybody coming to solar? No.
What'd you say?
The next meeting at 6:15, the solar committee. Which has suddenly gotten controversial.
You don't need me for that, right?
No.
Thank you for your campaign, Michael.
Thank you.
Good night, all. Bye.
Bye.